Advocates have been warning about the risk of coronavirus disease spreading in state prisons. Now, dozens of inmates and staff are sick at Stateville Correctional Center near Joliet. We'll hear from two men inside.
It's like a symphony of coughs at night. During the day when it's quiet, everybody's just coughing. You can hear the people obviously sick.
We'll also hear from parents who are adjusting to having their kids learning at home and talk about some of the mental health challenges that come along with that. And with many of us having the luxury, or depending on your perspective, the curse of more free time at home, some people are taking up quarantine projects. We'll talk to an Illinois baker who launched her career while staying at home with her son. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, and WNIJ in DeKalb. The news is next. Stay with us. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. 1 month ago, the Illinois Department of Public Health reported 4 confirmed cases of coronavirus disease. Today, April 2nd, there are more than 7,000 cases statewide and 141 related deaths. Social distancing is recommended to curb the illness from spreading so fast, but that's not entirely possible in state prisons. The Illinois National Guard is now moving into Stateville Correctional Center outside Chicago near Joliet, where an inmate died, and dozens more inmates and state employees have tested positive for COVID-19. Here's Brigadier General Richard Neely at a news conference in Chicago on Thursday.
We're providing about 30 individuals, primarily medical technicians, that will be able to support establishing tents that will be able to separate out the inmates and provide them a little bit more distancing and to kind of quarantine them off into a different area in the prison. One of the scenarios is to actually put the tents into the gymnasium area, and then that way we could put 8 patients at a time into those tents, and then that way they get them out of the general infirmary area.
And new this morning, NPR member station WBEZ in Chicago is reporting civil rights groups are suing the Illinois Department of Corrections and Governor J.B. Pritzker to push for the release of vulnerable prisoners. In a moment, you'll hear from 2 people at Stateville Correctional Center about the conditions there. But first, let's introduce our guests. Lee Gaines is a reporter for WILL's Illinois Newsroom. She talked with 2 incarcerated men in Stateville recently. Welcome to the 21st, Lee.
Happy to be back.
And joining us on the line is Amy. Her 21-year-old son is serving a 2-year sentence for illegal cannabis sales. He has an underlying health problem, and she's concerned about the conditions at the prison where he's housed. Amy, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And just a note, for privacy reasons, we are not going to be disclosing Amy's last name. Lee, I want to start with you. Do we know how many prisoners have the coronavirus disease in the Illinois Department of Corrections?
Well, we know what the Illinois Department of Corrections is reporting on their website, which I've been refreshing a lot these past few days. So as of this morning, 48 incarcerated men at Stateville have tested positive and 20 staff members at that same prison. And then the Illinois Department of Health, as you mentioned, they had their first death. Announced the first death at Stateville Correctional Center. 12 men there are hospitalized and 77 more are showing symptoms. We also have another 4 men who are at the North Lawndale Adult Transition Center. They've also tested positive for the virus, as well as a staff member there. And then there are some staff members, you know, scattered at prisons across the state at Menard Correctional Center, also at Sheridan Correctional Center, which is west of Joliet, who have tested positive for the disease. So I have been seeing these numbers increasing every time I check the Illinois Department of Corrections website.
So as we said, one of those prisons where an incarcerated person actually died was in Stateville. I understand 2 prisoners from Stateville called you recently. What did they have to say?
Yeah, I spoke with inmates named Jamal and Willie. We're not using their last names because they fear retaliation for speaking out. Both told me that they believe that they have the virus and are recovering now. And we have some clips of them explaining their symptoms.
One day, it was like late night, I had a terrible headache.
Like I couldn't even really go to sleep. I had a fever. I was sweating. I was cold. I was hot. And then the next day I woke up, I felt kind of fine. I left out. But by the time I made it back to Brazil, I couldn't do nothing but just take off half of my clothes and just hop in the bed because I was so tired. And after that, I was just basically in the bed with a terrible headache. And then I'll say once the headache went away, my senses, my taste and my smell went away. And I'm still, it's like it's kind of coming back, but it hasn't came back all the way.
I felt sick 2 days after Willie felt sick. So I'd say last week on Monday, I began with a terrible headache, had a fever, chills. I couldn't really sleep. Then the cough ensued. It was a dry cough at first. Then it started to get phlegmy. And I've been experiencing that for about a week and a half now. And, a lot of us, it's like a symphony of coughs at night. During the day when it's quiet, there's just everybody just coughing. You could hear if people are obviously sick.
So that first voice we heard from was Willie, and the second person was Jamal. They told me that their temperature has only been taken once by prison staff. And Willie actually just this week, because I spoke with them last week, sent me a message through this kind of prison emailing system. So he's been watching Governor Pritzker's press conferences inside prison. And he told me he's upset by what he's hearing from the governor and what's not happening in the prison. So basically, he says that they're still running recreational and chow lines, is what he calls it, where inmates can gather and congregate. He said that social distancing is impossible because of the restricted space, and that they have not received hand sanitizer. All they've received is a bar or a 2 ounce bar of Dial soap, and that was just on one occasion. And staff at the prison have also been passing out watered down bleach that they mix in a mop bucket, he told me. And that he says there have been no well-being checks. And, basically they're only testing people who show extremely grave symptoms of COVID-19.
So in a moment, we're going to talk with the mother of an inmate at another facility about his situation. But first, I did want to point out that we asked the Illinois Department of Corrections what they have to say about this. They sent a statement to us. It reads, in part, "Our response to COVID-19 continues to be deliberate and aggressive. We are taking vigorous steps to protect our staff and men and women in custody from this disease, including thoroughly reviewing those who are eligible for early release, appropriately quarantining or isolating men and women in custody, and equipping staff with personal protective equipment." It goes on to say, the statement from the Department of Corrections goes on to say, they're working closely with the Department of Public Health, Emergency Management Agency, and following guidelines put forth by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But Lee, I would take it that the men you talked with at Stateville say not enough is getting done.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's important for our listeners to understand that both of these men and also other men that I've been communicating with through that emailing system have told me that they don't have faith in the prison's healthcare system. I also think it's important to note, just for context for our listeners, that a court-appointed monitor has been tasked with overseeing an overhaul of the department's healthcare system in 2019. And that was part of a settlement from a class action lawsuit against the agency that alleged a lack of basic sanitation, medical errors, and failures in basic care. And this is all pre-COVID-19. So, you know, we have another clip of Willie talking about how he views the healthcare inside.
They can't even handle somebody having an asthma attack, let alone multiple cases of coronavirus to somebody who's on dialysis or has heart problems or respiratory problems. No, I believe if it really, really hit, I definitely think a lot of these older guys are going to die unless, by the grace of God, they don't.
And that was Willie again, and that was actually before the Illinois Department of Public Health announced the first death in Stateville. So something else that Willie has told me and that advocates for people inside have also told me is that this situation is not just about not having enough, you know, cleaning supplies or access to personal hygiene. He says it's also difficult for them to communicate with people on the outside. Their loved ones are really worried about them. And he says it's very hard to make phone calls. They have these tablets inside, but they can't use them for video visits. And he thinks, well, he says it feels like the prison is restricting their communication with the outside world.
If you're just joining us, the COVID-19 pandemic continues to pass through the state of Illinois and into its prison system. One inmate has died, dozens are hospitalized. Now for another perspective on what's happening inside Illinois prisons, we're joined by Amy on the line from Texas. Her son is in the Shawnee Correctional Unit in Vienna, and he was convicted of illegal cannabis sales. For privacy reasons, we're only going to use Amy's first name. Amy, thanks for being with us again. And I understand you talked to your son yesterday. Can you tell us what he says is happening?
He says that right now they moved hundreds of guys around. They're changing their rooms. The room that my son was in 2 days ago had a mold smell that he said he's been experiencing since he was put in like about 9 months ago, and that all the vents are dusty and dirty, and that they're, it's just filthy. And he is getting out with luck 30 minutes a day, if not every 48 hours. So it's I think there's a lack of staff. They just started wearing gloves and masks yesterday. So, I mean, this has been going on for a while. I don't know why unless they're lacking supplies. And they did respond to me and my concerns, but they said there are no cases of COVID-19 at Shawnee. But I don't know how they can make that statement when they aren't testing. According to my son and other inmates, they're not testing. They're checking fevers.
And you say that his cell is pretty small, six feet by 8 feet, and he has particular concerns about his cellmate. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, his cellmate was coughing for the last couple weeks and had shortness of breath. Because of me reaching out to IDOC, they took a nurse in there and checked both of their temperatures, but they told the cellmate that he didn't have it, so, you know, that they were done worrying about it with them. But my son has asthma, and he has a compromised immune system. So, you know, of course, I'm very concerned.
And as you say, no one, as far as you're hearing from your son, that there is no testing going on for the actual coronavirus disease.
Correct. So their statement should sound more like, there's no known cases of COVID-19, not there are no cases, because that's not factual.
Does your son have access to any cleaning supplies or anything to clean his cell?
He did say that the cleaner that he was using said disinfectant on it, so I was happy to hear about that. They don't have the sanitizer. He said that was offered in commissary, so if they wanted it, they would have to buy it. And then they did hand out the little 2 ounce bars of soap yesterday.
And a 2 ounce bar, just so people can picture, that's like a hotel size bar of soap, right? Not like a regular.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that might last 3 times.
So you talked to your son. He's at a medium security facility here, but you said he's being treated like he's in maximum security. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, there are facilities throughout Illinois that either are minimum security, where there's dorm style and they're out all day, or where there's medium security and they have access to walk around all day, but yet they have their own cell. And the facility that my son is in, it's more like a max security, and he's actually a minimum security certificate inmate. So he's in a medium security, treated as a maximum security, which means that they're locked in their cell on a normal, you know, without this going on, they would be out an hour in the morning, an hour at night. And so now they're out 30 minutes a day if they get to, if they're staffed enough to come by and let them out, because they are letting them out, like, I think less than 10 at a time. But there's been days where my son doesn't get out at all. So it takes 48 hours before he can come out of an 8x6 cell.
And we only have a couple of minutes left in our, I thank you again for sharing your story with us. We only have a couple of minutes left, but what would you like to see happen for your son?
I would like to see, first of all, he's got less than a year, and he's got a compromised immune system. He's in for cannabis, which is now legal in the state of Illinois. I would like for them to look at him as somebody that could come home on house arrest. He has definitely demonstrated to me and his counselor that he's been rehabilitated. But if not in the interim, can these inmates go through some sort of, well, while they are locked up like this, well, I don't agree with being locked up and only 30 minutes out, but while they are locked up like this, can they go through their programs? Can every facility offer some sort of program for them, because they're just sitting there anyway? They have access to tablets that could access law library, and they don't have that on. more access to phone calls, emails, to have the emails being monitored and turned mm-hmm. around faster than what they are, which is weeks at a time.
Okay. Amy, thank you so much.
Out right now more than
Yeah, Amy, thank you. I'm sorry we have to end it there. Thank you for sharing your time with us and your story with us. She's the mother of an incarcerated man at Shawnee Correctional Center. We also spoke with Lee Gaines from WILL's Illinois newsroom, who spoke with two inmates at the Stateville Correctional Facility. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way. Because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
Thanks for tuning into The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Because of COVID-19 and Governor Pritzker's stay-at-home order, many parents have also suddenly been thrown into the role of teacher. This shift can be stressful, to say the least. You might hear somebody yelling in the background of this very live broadcast, but especially when their parents have their own work to do on top of a pandemic to worry about. We'll speak with mental health professionals in just a few minutes and get some tips from them about how to make this adjustment a little smoother, but first, I want to welcome Ashley Price. She has experience homeschooling her fifth grader and a second grader, and she's on the line with us now from Urbana. Ashley, thanks so much for being with us, and welcome to the 21st.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And just a reminder, you can always join the conversation. How have the past few weeks been like for you, parents? Give us a call, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21STShow. That's 21st Show. So, Ashley, I want to start with you in this segment, because you actually homeschooled your two kids up until January of this year. Can you talk about some of the challenges you were experiencing with homeschooling and what kind of toll this was taking on your mental health at that time?
Sure. So we homeschooled from the beginning, which means I've been staying home with my kids for about 10 years now. Started working part-time, building up my own business on the side. And as my interest in that started increasing, I honestly was starting to feel really burnt out on homeschooling. On top of that, while academically it was going very well for my children, they're both extremely intense. And there was a lot of times when if one of them got frustrated with something, it would collapse into screaming almost immediately. And that kind of turned into this whole feedback loop of one kid gets frustrated with their math, falls on the floor yelling, I have to literally pick them up sometimes, help them with math, and the other kid gets frustrated and then starts screaming about something else. And it turned into this, just, I spent a lot of my days bouncing around, managing emotions, trying to deal with frustrations. And because of that, I didn't have time for all of the things that make me happy outside of, you know, my family. I couldn't garden much last year. I couldn't do many of my hobbies. That just, it honestly put me in something of a depression. I was able to keep up with my business, which was growing, and keep up with homeschooling, but that was all my life was. And we really kind of needed something to shift. So we decided to start looking, we did all of the things we could think of, changing our schedules, all of the techniques, reading parenting books. I started seeing a therapist. My oldest started seeing a therapist, and all of that helped. But it wasn't enough to really make the situation sustainable with all of us happy. So we realized we needed to do something different, and we found the Montessori school in Savoy, Montessori Champaign-Urbana, and that was a really good fit for us because they followed all of the, like, all of the reasons that we were homeschooling. They were able to meet them, but in an environment that gave me a chance to do something else too.
So how did you feel when you enrolled your kids at this Montessori program earlier this year? Was there any sort of reprieve from some of the challenges you were talking about with homeschooling?
Oh, absolutely. So it was a big transition. I'd been planning on homeschooling from the beginning. It was a central feature of our life. My husband was also homeschooled, and we were both very committed to it. So this was a big change. It was kind of an adjustment, figuring out what things were going to look like. But at the same time, it gave me the space that I needed, and they were immediately thriving. There's this thing where children magically are better behaved for people who are not their parents than for their parents.
This all sounds so familiar.
Yeah, it's something they do. And talk to my friends who don't have kids about this, and they're like, do you think it'll be better? I'm like, yeah, kids just are better for other people. So all of the behavior challenges that my oldest had were gone. The teachers had no idea that she, you know, has strong frustration issues. My younger one is a little more difficult in some ways, and so he can be a bit, I call him a curmudgeon. So he curmudgeons at school sometimes, but it's really not that big a deal. And because they're gone, they come home and have space to, you know, play, read, watch TV, what have you, all of the tension in our family just basically dropped. Everybody, it was peaceful. There was very few fights between the kids, or between, you know, us, me and the kids. And yeah, it was really nice having that breath of fresh air. Like, we could just have space. And I was really enjoying being just in the role of parent instead of having to worry about all of the parenting stuff and, you know, emotional guidance. And my daughter's 10 and a half, so we're starting to deal with, you know, questions about impending puberty and do all of that stuff. And not also have to worry about, are they doing enough in math and science? What about history? Have we done enough? Is she reading enough?
So what a relief. So that was so what a relief it must have been to get them in school. You say your family dynamic improves, your stress levels are better, and then there's a global pandemic. What have the past few weeks been like?
It's been intense. It's been a lot. We have been getting, academically, the kids get a lot of support from the school, and because they still have the teachers that they can talk to, they're starting to do meetings with their classmates. It's kind of giving some of a little bit of that school structure, but we still have this, you know, 6+ year habit of them really relying on us. My husband has been incredibly helpful for this. We've realized that I'm still burnt out from homeschooling, so he is taking the lead on making sure the kids get their schoolwork started, and I have a chance to do other things for a while. But it's been a lot. The longer the restrictions happen, the more, as new ones come down, like, I have a day of just like sobbing and panics because, you know, you can't really go to the playground. I can't go to the, you know, forest preserve that I always go to in the spring, take my kids to. A big part of our homeschooling in spring was just going out to the parks, nature observation, and we can't do that anymore. My kids miss their friends, both their friends at school and their homeschool friends. We had a lot of activities when we were homeschooling, and slightly less when they were in school. And so we're all just really feeling that change and trying to get through it. But there are days when there's a lot of screaming and crying.
We've been speaking with Ashley Price about the new newfound situation many of us parents find ourselves in, of being both at home working and at home with our kids. This is something that Ashley has dealt with for a number of years now. We have a caller on the line. I want to go to Greg in Chicago. I understand you have been teaching from home. What has your experience been of that?
Yeah, it's been amazing. I'm really blessed. My upstairs neighbor has a 7-year-old, and they've allowed me to be his art teacher, and I'm finding the experience more like he's teaching me, I'm not teaching him. Every day he comes downstairs, colored pencils, watercolors. Like, it's really just been an amazing opportunity to kind of slow down, love the people you're lucky enough to love, and like just check back in. I also want to thank you so much for your coverage of Statesville. There are just brilliant people like Joseph Dole on the inside, and we're asking Governor Pritzker to check to his better angels. I mean, it's just one of those great moments where we can all do so much more if we slow down.
All right, Greg, thank you for that call. And a reminder, you can always join the conversation with us here on the 21st. How have the past few weeks been for you as a parent in particular? Give us a call, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21STShow. I want to bring Amy Slutsky into the conversation. She's a mother, a national board certified licensed professional counselor, and a special needs educational advocate. Amy, welcome to the 21st. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to, I guess I want to begin by asking you about Ashley's story. You were listening to that, I believe. So it's obviously unique, but there are a lot of things that I, as a parent, and I'm sure a lot of parents who are listening can hear in that we've all been dealing with, and certainly in the past month, if not longer. And she mentioned some of these issues that we're all navigating through. What have you been hearing from people about this new situation for many of us?
So I think what I've been hearing the most is that the switch between sending our children to school and then having to homeschool them ourselves has been so dramatic. And one of the things that I'm encouraging people to do is to slow down a little bit, kind of like your caller said, but to respect your own learning curve. I have an education background. I was in the classroom for 15 years. I know nothing about educating my second grader who's got special needs. It's just not my expertise. So I think everybody, parents, when they are becoming at-home teachers, need to figure out how to just do one thing at a time. For example, if you have a child who's going to bed too late, they want to go to bed at 8:30, you want them to bed at 8 o'clock. One of the things I would recommend is just to move it 5 minutes at a time, because what your brain really wants is organization, and it seeks patterns all the time. So if you can just move the pattern a little bit at a time, that's going to help decrease the anxiety for the children, decrease anxiety on moms like Ashley, who have many, many hats. She's a business owner. She's a spouse. She's the mom of two kids, which makes her two kinds of moms. So one of the things I think we can all do is give ourselves a little bit of grace and let ourselves just do one thing at a time, and to rebuild this new normal we're all trying to figure out.
So Amy, I'm sure we could spend a whole segment on just this question alone, but you know, now that so many of us parents are in this role, these dual roles of teacher and parent, you know, there's expectations that we feel on us, moms in particular, I know, but we look at, for my own kids, there's a Facebook group set up through their school, and I can see what other parents are doing, and they've sort of replicated some of the lesson materials from the school at home. And you know, those of us who are working just don't necessarily have time for that. How do we navigate these two roles? Do we have to take them on both, or do we just accept that we can't do everything?
So I think there's teachable moments all over the place. Thanks to Disney Plus rolling out Frozen 2 early, I have had to watch it 147 times.
You know, mercifully, my own kids do not like it as much as Frozen 1, so I've been spared. We watched it once.
Oh, but it just got extended to April 30th, Brian, so keep your fingers crossed for that one. But it's interesting because, you know, especially with special needs, there are all these goals and services. But what you can do is you can use the media they prefer, like a movie, and see if you can't sneak in some of the education that way. Pause it. Ask them, what do you think is going to happen next? You've got great reading skills for inference, and ask them about the setting. They should know that at a certain age. So I think if we just get a little creative and we work with what the kids naturally do and what they want to do, we could sneak in a lot of those educational goals without having to print the right worksheet, remember how we used to do third grade math, try to reconcile that with new math skills, and really try to figure out how to prioritize your family's values with what needs to get done at like a higher level for educational and Common Core standards.
Yeah. And so, you know, a few moments ago, Ashley, I want to bring you back into the conversation. I was just talking about this experience of doubling the pressure, right? Because you're going back into this role of parent and teacher. We heard from Greg, who a caller a few moments ago, who reminded us that, you know, he's enjoying taking this time with his kid or with a kid, but it sounded to me like it wasn't his kid necessarily. It was the neighbor's kid. So there is some separation there that those of us who are parents don't necessarily get to enjoy. Can you talk a little bit about are you feeling this pressure to do both roles again?
To some extent, because we don't know how long this is going to be, but one of the nice things about homeschooling, and this is one of the reasons it worked for us for so long, is we have the space in our schedule as homeschoolers, when I was homeschooling and still today, to give the kids time to explore what they're interested in, follow their passion projects, dig down into, you know, deep dive into whatever they're into. And that could be Minecraft building. That could be my kids. I've got my almost 8-year-old is writing a comic book. My kids together have been working on a movie musical off and on for the past several months, and they've really ramped that up in the past few days. So, like, what I'm trying – like there is some amount of pressure. Thankfully, our school is a very low pressure school, and I'm not hearing that from there. But there is this pressure in our society for parents, especially mothers, to be on top of everything and do everything, make sure everything's enriching and perfect. And that's just not going to work in general. And it's really not going to work during a pandemic. As someone who's been there, done that before with homeschooling, now back in that role, with more support from the teachers, thankfully, we are just trying to get, you know, a couple of hours of the academic stuff and their school meetings and such done in the morning, and then giving them the afternoon to do whatever the heck they want. And I find that they learn really, really well that way. We have great conversations about, you know, history, looking through, I have a book of like, you know, just a coffee table book of classic art or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so they find pictures of, you know, Renaissance paintings, and we discuss some of the symbolism in there. Or they found a picture of the French Revolution and a guillotine, and we got to explain that and have this discussion about how history works and classism. And there's a lot of stuff that can come up just organically through conversations and letting the kids mm-hmm. explore their interests.
So we've been
and
speaking
I
with
think this is an
Yeah, sorry. We need to take a break here. I'd like Ashley Price and Urbana Mom, thank you. We will stay with us. And Amy Slutsky, she's a National Board Certified Licensed Professional Counselor and a Special Needs Educational Advocate. We want to continue the conversation after the break. We want you to join us. Give us a call, 800-222-9455, or tweet us at 21STShow. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation, talk more about how parents are helping students with special needs navigate learning from home. I'm Brian Mackey. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As Governor Pritzker's stay-at-home order continues, all students in Illinois are learning from home until at least April 30th. Today, we've been talking about some of the challenges that parents have been facing as they navigate e-learning. Amy Slutsky is a mom, a National Board Certified Licensed Professional Counselor, and a Special Needs Educational Advocate. We've also been speaking with Urbana mom Ashley Price. We reached out to listeners for their perspectives on e-learning, and we heard back from Nicole Schlechter. She's a mom of four from Pingree Grove, Illinois, and her oldest son has autism, ADHD, and anxiety. Here's what she had to say.
As far as e-learning goes for my son, it is a huge source of anxiety. Just visually looking at all of the work that has to be done is overwhelming for him. The deadlines, we're only getting homework about 24 hours in advance. We're only getting a schedule 24 hours in advance. And for a kid who really benefits from getting a heads up on a schedule change, this 24-hour notice thing is not really working for us. So it is something that I communicated to his teacher about and we will be working on. It's just very frustrating to know that with all of these changes going on, the teachers are working really hard, the districts are trying to come up with a plan that fits the majority, and what's happening is special education is kind of slipping through the cracks. The problem is that there is no way of guaranteeing special education students are receiving an appropriate education right now.
I want to thank Nicole for sending in that message. We'll have a longer version of it up on our website, 21stshow.org. Amy, just a few minutes left in this conversation, but you're a special needs educational advocate. Can you talk about some of the additional challenges that this situation can pose to kids who may get that extra support through school?
Yes, and my son is similar to Nicole's oldest. I have an 8-year-old who is on the spectrum. He has ADHD. He also has anxiety. It's the triple threat. And it's really scary to be able to put a little bit of emotion in this conversation. It is really scary when you have the best circumstances with a kid with special needs because there is so much at stake. You have no idea what they're learning because they, for some examples, can't tell you what's going on in school. You can't ask them how their day is. There's a speech-language deficit. So now we're really scared and we're really frustrated because the professionals who are supposed to help us, we don't have access to. So I think Nicole is right in line with all of the community in so much as we are terrified about what this means for our kids.
Ashley.
As the advocate. Oh, go ahead.
No, please, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, as the advocate, here's a little bit of sugar in that spice. We in special education use typical kids in order to set goals for special needs kids. So the entire world is at the same place where all of our kids will be socially promoted to some extent. All of our kids will not be reaching their potential. So when we go to these IEP meetings, whenever school is in session, that's part of the conversation. So our kids are going to be behind. They might be a little further behind than we would like, but so are their typical peers in their classroom. And schools and the district and the state is really doing their best to address that. I've been a part of IEP meetings during the shelter in place. And so the community at the school is still working very, very close with trying to make sure that you are getting all of the needs met for your child.
Ashley, you mentioned before the break about, I think, a comic book that your kids are working on, this idea of, you know, not all learning has to come from books and math problems, that sort of thing, that it can be more organic. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, how are you, can you talk a little bit about how you're structuring your day? I mean, is that something that's helpful? And what does that look like for your family?
So it's been changing week by week because as the teachers have a chance to figure out what works and adjust scheduling and all of that. So we're still kind of feeling it out, but my kids have meetings with their class about 9 and 9:30. And we generally start doing the sit-down schoolwork right after breakfast. So that's when they get their math, their language work done, their piano practice, so on and so forth. They take a lot of breaks in there. So if they need to get up and move around, get out the crazies, do some cartwheels, read for 10 minutes so they can just like reset if one of them's frustrated, that absolutely happens. And that kind of helps keep the flow going and find that balance. Middle of the day, they get, you know, actually usually about now, they get a TV break. I think one kid is playing Sims a lot, the others watching YouTube videos, and that's fine. And then the afternoon, if usually my younger one, because he's, you know, 7 in second grade, he's got less work. So he's usually done by then. Sometimes my daughter isn't. So she'll get some of her schoolwork done, some of her bigger projects in the afternoon. But otherwise, the afternoon is for free play. And so we're doing that. We're going out on a lot of walks. They've been doing a lot of roller skating. Dinner, family activity of some sort. Tonight, we have our family gymnastics night because it's fun. So we're going to do handstands and cartwheels and all of that silliness before bed. But there's just the key is like having the flexibility for free movement, for taking breaks and space for them to do what they want to do.
All right. Ashley Price is a mom in Urbana. We've also been speaking with Amy Slutsky, who's a national board certified licensed professional counselor. Thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the next month at least, many of us across Illinois will be staying in. Governor J.B. Pritzker extended the state's stay-at-home order until April 30th to stop the spread of the coronavirus. For those of us who are lucky enough to have jobs that allow us to continue working from inside our homes and with many group activities canceled, that does mean some extra time for solitary pursuits. We asked our listeners to share with us what they were up to. And by the way, here at the 21st, we totally understand if your free time activity is just catching up on Netflix or trying to get an extra nap. No judgment. Elizabeth Nickel in Urbana wrote to us saying she's been sorting through old family photos and letters, writing our family's story. We'll tweet out a picture of what she sent to us at 21st Show. We'd like you to continue sending your staying in projects to us at talk@21stshow.org. And next week, we'll be speaking with Elizabeth Segrin, author of The Rocket Years, who devoted a whole chapter of her book to hobbies. We've also seen quite a few aspiring bakers come across our social media feeds during the stay-at-home order in Illinois, like this listener.
This is Aaron Chambers here in Springfield, and to help pass the time here during our period of self-isolation, our family has thrown ourselves into the art of sourdough bread making, and we've really enjoyed that. Delicious, nutritious, and we found also it's an opportunity to help educate our girls about some elements of science, the roles of bacteria and yeast, and the act of fermentation, and most importantly, the concept of a ratio as you're putting those pieces together. And so yeah, glad that we've had this opportunity for whatever that's worth in this horrible time, and certainly would recommend that for anyone else looking to, help bring their family together.
So we wanted to invite an expert on to help us with a few tips about this. Ellen King is a classically trained chef, and she's co-owner and head of baking operations at Huhn in Evanston, Illinois. Ellen, welcome back to the 21st.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I understand that you actually started baking bread when you were at home with your son.
That's right. Yep. It was actually just around the time of the 2008 recession, and I didn't want to go back and work in restaurants, and I had a young son, and I missed eating really good bread like I had eaten in Seattle.
And so you sourced the flour from your bread from a farmer named Harold, do I have that right, in Danforth, Illinois?
Yeah.
What's so special about Harold's flour?
So what makes our bakery unique, and we're starting to see a lot of bakeries do this, is working with local farmers. So the flour that we work with, a majority of it is coming from Southern Illinois. Actually, I guess he'd be called Central Illinois, in Danforth, Illinois, and it's all grown in the farms right around the area. And then Harold actually has two stone mills. So all of the grains are stone milled, which creates a more nutritious flour for us to work with, because it retains a lot of the oils and the nutrients that normally get sifted out in commercial flour that uses a roller mill.
And so let's talk about some of the tips for actually making sourdough. We've seen a lot of people trying their hand at this on our social media feeds. I guess sourdough is something that requires you to be at home a lot, right?
Yeah, you know, sourdough is honestly, it's like having probably the best toddler around, because you feed it and then you put it to rest and you just kind of like let it do its thing. And, you know, I'd say the first 8 days of when you create a starter is the point where you really have to kind of keep track of it. So, you know, you literally just mix together flour and water, and using stone milled flour, there's a lot more enzymatic activity going on. So that's why you're more successful making a starter if you're using freshly stone milled flour. It's alive. And so you mix equal parts flour and water together, and then, you know, you let it rest for 2 days, and you kind of look, you want to use a clear container because you want to be able to see if there's any bubbles happening. I kind of equate it to a pancake batter that, you know, you start seeing the bubbles forming on the top and on the side. And that shows you that there's activity happening. And once you see that is when you start your daily feeding for the next 6 to 8 days to get it into to use the child analogy again, it's like potty training. It's like you keep a consistent schedule and you feed it at the same time, and then it's going to be ready to be used in about 8 days from there. But before then, it's constant feeding and dumping, because you're not able to really use the dumping portion that once you have an established starter, you'll be able to use that into making scones or pancakes or bread or whatever. So, yeah.
Eight days makes me think that we had vastly different experiences with potty training, but I digress. So what are some common, and we only have a minute or two left for our conversation here. What are some common mistakes people might make when doing sourdough from your experience?
Well, I think one of the main things is people think they've killed it. And to be honest, the only way you kill a starter is by throwing it out. You can pretty much revive. If you've had any activity, you can revive it. So don't throw it out. If you see gray sludge on the top because maybe you've been neglectful and you haven't fed it, or it's been in your refrigerator for a few days, just dump most of it out, save about a tablespoon or, you know, about 20 grams of it, and then start feeding it again, flour and water, over the next few days. But just don't ever throw it out, and you're never going to kill it. So they're much more resilient than you expect. So that's a common question.
Yeah. And last question, just about 30 seconds here, but for those of us maybe who are a little too impatient, even now, to try sourdough, is there another introductory bread that you can recommend?
You know, I love Mark Bittman, and he worked on a no-knead kind of sourdough bread with, I think it was with Jim Leahy, and that's a great one. It uses, I think he has the sourdough, but he also has one with some instant yeast, but you can convert that into the sourdough where you just, it's literally like mix flour and water together. That's kind of a poolish is what you would have, and add a dash of instant yeast and then make bread from there. And that's a great one. But honestly, if you're going to venture into sourdough, you got to learn patience. And if this virus isn't going to teach it, then I don't know what will. So give yourself time and don't try and rush it.
All right. Ellen King is the co-owner and director of baking operations at Hune in Evanston. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you for having me.
That is all the time we have for today's show. You can stay up to date with The 21st on Twitter. Again, we'd love to hear about your quarantine projects. Send us an email about that to talk@21stshow.org. You can also find all the great conversations we've had today and this week and going back through time on our website, 21stshow.org. Our show is produced by Libby Foster and Anna Casey. Eunice Alpasan is our intern. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Brian Mackey. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.